It's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I'm your host, Captain Nostalgia. Please help me in welcoming, from Crazy Monkey Inc., Mr. Gary Goldstein and Gabriel Olbraz Ramirez. And we have music guest this week, Hannah Zara, who we'll hear from in just a bit.
Hey. What's up, big dog? How's it going, Gary? How's it going, Josh?
What's up? All right, so let's jump right into this. Gary, you are just releasing your first title with Crazy Monkey Inc. Tell us a little bit about it, man.
Basically, it's a gory action comic that's a... It gives some insight on the character Chaos from Midnight's Avenger, who I'm assuming people who are familiar with Crazy Monkey Inc. are familiar with that character. And Gabriel is like, dude, take this this character and do something cool with it. And I said, here's this idea I got. And he really liked it, and we went with it, and we went hard on it, and it's violent, and it's action-packed, and it's awesome.
So tell us a little bit about, Raz, tell us a little bit about the creation of where Chaos kind of came from.
Absolutely. Well, my first character that I released and published is Midnight's Avenger. She's my homage to Batman and the Punisher and my love letter to strong female characters, you know. And when I was making her, I felt like I wanted a Joker type of nemesis for her, but my problem with Joker was always that he was always a little bit above Batman as far as intellect, but he was always below Batman. If we ever got to a hand-to-hand combat, Batman was roughing that fool up, you know what I mean? He was skinny, he was agile, but Batman, he was knocking him out, elbows to the face, making him, well, you're hitting yourself, you know what I mean? He was dominating that fool. So I wanted my character to be superior physically and mentally to the hero, but that overconfidence is why he always loses. You get what I mean? Like I wanted him to be one of those people that he's so evil, he's so vicious, and at the same time, that evil viciousness is his own worst enemy. He's his own worst enemy, you know? So if anyone read the Midnight's Avenger, the first three issues I did, I kind of wanted to demonstrate that with Chaos in the way when Midnight's Avenger, and I don't spoil alert getting, but when they fight, Chaos is he's running the show for a while, and it's only through his own confidence that he loses the fight to her, you know. So with that type of character, I always wanted to give him his own series, because for me it's about studying the psychosis of lunacy. You know what I mean? Yeah. I come from the strong feeling that evil people, they're not born, they're bred. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now, whether it's a nature versus nurture, whatever it is, that's what I examine as a writer and as a creator. And with Chaos, that's what I always wanted to explore, was this guy is evil. This guy is rotten to the core. Why? Like, why? And I planned on doing a little introspection into that. And then along comes Gary, who out of the blue, you know, one of the things with, and we've talked about this before, Josh, but one of the things with being an indie publisher is someone's always showing you their art, or someone's always telling you they got a script, or someone's always telling you they got a comic, or someone always needs a, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everywhere, someone's got the next greatest idea. They always do. But the problem is I'm looking for someone that has a good idea and a voice, a unique voice. Right. You know, for me as a creator, that's what stands out. And Gary, there's something wrong with that guy. You know what I mean? He's thinking dark. He's thinking twisted. You know what I mean? That's not a healthy man right there, you know? And I thought, God damn, I read some of the scripts And I thought, you know what? I feel like here's someone that gets it. You know what I mean? I feel like here's someone that gets it, that can go to a dark place and kind of examine it. And from there, we went from, I kind of have a project, I kind of want to do something, to, hey, man, I've got a bitchin' character that I bet he goes right up your alley. And, you know, the combination was made, and I couldn't be happier with what he did. And in fact, the cool thing was, and I think, I want to, this is like my biggest compliment to Gary's writing, is Chaos, Midnight's Avenger is my baby. You know what I mean? That's my heart and soul. That's my main character. And Chaos being her nemesis, obviously he's important to me. And when I got his script, there is so much stuff in it that he nailed so good that I went in and I was like, man, this is something that I'm going to weave into the tapestry. This is, you know what I mean? This isn't a throwaway backup story, what we're doing. Like, I want to, there are stuff I told him that he incorporated, and there is stuff that I told him to incorporate that he added flares himself, you know? So it was a great experience. And there you go. There's a long story long, Josh. You know how I do.
And that's usually when you have a creator that you're bringing on, you don't want to have, especially in an indie film or like an indie sense, you don't ever want to have a story that's just kind of a throwaway or, you know, a canon, because, you know, how many times have we seen, you know, DC reboot their universe? How many times have we seen Marvel reboot their universe? So really what helps independent publishers stand out is that if you can kind of weave all these titles together, and you know what Gary's doing with Chaos, it's affecting Midnight's Avenger. It's not just a standalone backup story. So it's cool that you guys are kind of have that communication and that vision together. It's not just, hey, I got this story idea, you know, would you mind if I took a crack at it? So Gary, for you, reading Midnight's Avenger and understanding about this character, what was it that appealed to you? Say, you know what, I got a story that I think would really be great. Let me take a stab at it.
All right, so I'll tell you, man. He sent me the digital files for the comics to get familiar with the characters and the story and everything. And I read it, and I always say it. I definitely self-claim that I specialize in horror. With writing, whether it's comics, novels, poetry in a sense, I'll get to that later. But yeah, man, anytime I get to put my hands around a dark character, someone who's evil in some way, someone that kills almost like a serial killer in a way, like he's a bladesman, he only uses blades as far as I'm concerned. He only uses blades, he's a bladesman, and I gave him that reason why he's a bladesman, because I noticed it in the comic. I said, he uses blades a lot. Why does he use blades a lot? And I explained, you know, without spoiling anything, I explained why he did it. I also wanted to make a few key points. Why and where did he get those tattoos on his face? Where did he get that hat from that he wears? What is it? Why does it mean so much to him? Why does he insist on wearing it? And when you read the first issue, it definitely tells you why and gives it good reason, and it's motivating and it's cool. And yeah, but the second issue, man, it has a subtitle, God of Gore, for a reason. I'll tell you that, man.
Yeah, you know, here's another thing too, and I kept telling this, Gary, and the there was so much expectation, because normally when you're a creator, the last thing you want to do is give your baby to someone else, you know. So when I gave Chaos to Gary, It was a long process of, man, I don't know. And I was always like, Gary, I don't know. It might be a little too slow, or you might be drawing it out, or, Gary, I'm not sure. And then we got the artist on it, Mariano, right? And I'm like, man, Gary, I think I see what, man. And then we got the colorist on it, right? And then once I was able to read his script with the image, and the thing I like is, like, he did the Chaos 2 issue series, like Quentin Tarantino did Kill Bill 1 and 2, you know. The first movie, there's a lot of setup, there's a lot of character building, there's a lot of explaining and putting you in that world. And there, it's gory, believe me, it's gory. With Gary, that, you know, he walks around with a bucket of blood. That's what he does. Just in case a bucket of blood, he's always got one. But the second issue is where he goes from horror to horror action, where in the first issue you're introduced to they got to read the book. It's great, but the way he did it, he's introduced you to the darkness, and in the second issue he shows you what happens when you unleash that darkness. And of course the government gets a hold of him, so you know .. you know how that goes. But it's a madman story written by a madman. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, it gets a little further into stuff, too, in the second issue, which is cool. It gives a little more depth into the other characters as well and brings back some people in the first issue. And it has some surprises in it, actually, you know, towards the end, I would say, like some cool prequel type. I don't know how to explain it, but the whole...
Go ahead.
The whole thing itself.
It's one of those things that he definitely connects the universe. It's, you know what I mean? That's really nice about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where does the book set up as far as, you know, digging into the mythology of Midnight's Avenger as a whole? Because, you know, this is a property right here that you are diving into. You know, this was the property that really started the dream of Crazy Monkey Inc. Where does, you know, God of Chaos or God of Gore, where does that really end in the long overhaul of the mythology?
Well, you know what? Here's what happens when you're a publisher and when you're a creator. Here's what happens. I'm going to go this direction and it's going to be awesome. And then what happens is this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens. Next thing you know, you're looking back like, holy crap, who would have thought of it? Chaos is Midnight's Avengers' nemesis. And like I said, I always imagined doing a story that would delve into his psychosis, but I never thought that I would go so quick with a two-issue series that I did. My goal is, and by the end of six issues of the Midnight's Avenger, you're going to be introduced to her whole world, a lot of her rogues cast, Chaos, of course. And then, for me, Chaos, just by the nature of his name, is going to be appearing in all Crazy Monkey Inc. titles throughout the course. You know what I mean? And I don't want to say he's going to be like the villain of the week, but he's going to appear everywhere, and we're going to examine him through subplots. You know what I mean? He's always going to be around, and you're going to explore the darkness of him, because to me, I feel like he's a character that's always into things, but he was a right-hand man to Kincaid. You know what I mean?
Bell froze, man.
I think of Chaos as at the end of this two-issue miniseries and at the end of the six-issue Midnight's Avenger arc, he's a masterless samurai. You know, he's a man wandering the earth with no war to fight for anybody. So he's kind of like this evil guy. What's he gonna do with himself? Where's he gonna go? You know, he was in with Chaos's crew or Kincaid's crew for the gore, for the battle, for the killing. You get what I'm saying? So when he, for me, it's all about examining this guy. He's not in it for the money. Like, he's not gonna be robbing banks, right? He's not robbing banks. Why is he robbing banks for? He's in for the violence, the thrill aspect. There's a sickness to him, and I want that to affect the whole. You know, it's funny. I'm talking to this like Josh, like you don't know. You know the thing we're working on, the angels and demons above and below. You know what I'm talking about? You know how that, with us doing that situation, and with Gary writing Chaos with this two-issue series. And you know the themes we're dealing with your series. You know the themes we're dealing with, the depression, all that stuff. I feel like Chaos is that linchpin throughout the series where that's the gloomiest and the worst. You know what I mean? There's in every story that you've ever seen, there's always an arc for a character, right? I'm at the point as a creator for Chaos that I don't think I want to give him an arc. I think I want him to always be that darkest storm in every situation he's in. You understand? So that's what we're looking at with Chaos. And of course, he's going to be appearing back with Midnight's Avenger, but he's going to be disrupting a lot of the Crazy Monkey Inc. universe for the time to come. And that's if he makes it that far.
I'm excited to see where you guys where it goes from here. We'll hopefully be doing a YouTube review of Chaos here soon. Excited.
You will have your link today after this conversation. I'm so glad you reminded me. I wish you would have reminded me sooner. We could have had this conversation during the show. Not working.
So you guys will have your review here soon.
Gary and Josh, you guys will have to attest. I'm one of those guys that if you're not breathing down my neck, you know what I mean? I can get lost in the woods for a while. I've got so many things going on. It's like I love it when I have creators and writers. And you know who, Gary, huh? I can say without saying names. Who's on me? Who's on me a lot? Who keeps me honest?
I talk to you every couple days. We talk.
He's smart. He learned quick. He hit you up to talk.
We know each other, you know?
So I want to ask you guys.
It's a good thing, though.
It is. I want to ask you guys something right now as far as, you know, Chaos and the bigger picture. Would you guys ever... So is this an origin story with what we're getting with these two issues? I think that's the biggest question.
In fact, I
don't know if we were.
If you tag me in, Gary, let me take this for my character. Let me tell you, Josh, this is not an origin story. This is a glimpse into a piece of what builds a madman. You get what I'm saying? This right here, by no means is it an origin story for Chaos. It's just a bunch of snippets that show you what can make a person that was just a kid before, you know, just a normal kid, turn into the madman that he is. And it's a glimpse. It's a glimpse. It's a study. It's a peek is what it is.
It's a good way to sum it
Thank
up.
Thank you, sir.
You can say that. Why not? That's good.
So, Gary, what's the creative process for you kind of like getting into these dark spaces of these characters?
Honestly, like me and you have discussed before in other podcasts, I'm a huge horror fan. I've always loved horror. And as much as I love superheroes and all that stuff, I don't prefer to write superhero stuff, honestly, because to me, just about everything's been done. With horror, a lot of stuff has been done, but there's a lot of stuff you can still do. And there's a lot of differences and different ways you can go about things. And, you know, I try to make my stuff as original as possible. Like, you know, but yeah, horror is just, it's where my heart's at. And it's just... Even if I do something that's like I've written a comic before, it's still in production. It's a Western. It's still some dark shit. It's still heavy. You know, like regardless, that's just no matter what I'm writing, it's what I'm putting into it, and it's just what's in me. Not to say that I believe those things or support those things, but I've just seen so much and absorbed so much, and I enjoy creating those things for fictional enjoyment. You know, I don't want to. The only thing I'm mentally sick, and I think of ways to kill people and shit. You know? But in a way, like these people that I create in these characters, and any characters that I write, part of them comes from within me. Part of the way I wrote Chaos was a little bit of my personality in there. You know, like the way he goes about stuff and the way he talks a little bit. Just all that naturally comes a little bit from what's in me, and I always put a little bit into that. Hopefully it's not too bad of a thing, you know, because the way I write, it's dark and fucked up. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, I have the horror graphic novel, Children of the Tar. That's some dark shit.
Oh, man. This project, I have to we've had some stuff going on that I'm about to have some really big announcements coming up. Literally, they're going to be back to back to back. But as soon as this stuff is done, this Children of the Tar book, we got it. I want this to be my Halloween spectacular because Gary wrote his ass off on this one. And the art we got, Salvo mascot, yeah? Oh, my Lord. This, you know the cool thing Gary did? Gary, what year does this take place, Gary?
66.
This is like his Friday the 13th homage. You know what I mean? It's like you remember in the olden days, they'd be like, if there was a horror movie, you don't go smoke weed, you don't go have sex with boys because you'll get killed. You know what I mean? This is that throwback Friday the 13th kind of like.
Definitely put that in there. Yeah, it's, definitely.
It's great stuff, and it's a good period piece. Of the way the art, the big things, man. I'm excited about that. He did a great job.
I'll tell you guys a secret too. This is pretty cool. In a way, I've in my own mind been secretly interlinking everything I write in a way. Like Children of the Tar takes place in 66. I wrote a horror comic for Advent Comics, a horror short that's supposed to be in an anthology. Can't say too much about it, but it's titled Jin. And that takes place in 88. And I just started writing a horror novel, like a straight up novel. I announced it recently in the title. It's called Limbjacker, and it takes place in 77. So I kind of have, you know, like 66, 77, 88. Like, I have them take place in those double years in those time periods. And it kind of, you know, like in a way, like how Stephen King, like when he writes, he has everything almost in a way kind of say that it relates in its own universe.
Yeah, connected.
Yeah, so I kind of use that as like, over time, people will notice those years and be like, he always uses the same double-digit years, you know, 66, 77, 88, like that. You know, eventually I'll probably do something 99, you know, but yeah, you know, but it's cool. I don't know. It's just something I've been doing, just wanted to do it. I don't know.
No, that's awesome, man.
And the chaos story takes place in 2222, so he kept the theme running all the way to the future. Nice. It's amazing. He's a genius. He's a madman.
Did I put the year that it takes place in? I don't know if I put the year it takes place in. I think I just kind of left it open.
Oh, yeah? I heard word on the street is I heard the creator said it took place in 2222. That's what I heard. I don't know.
That's the year it takes place in. Like, I believe you.
That's awesome. And I love the way that, you know, you talk about Stephen King and you know, trying to create universes, and The Dark Tower is probably one of the smartest put together books series that you'll ever read. I have not read any of the book series yet. Anthony from the Retro Gamers keeps telling me I need to do it. But so you guys can – Chaos is now for sale. We'll have links below.
You won.
Issue one, right, is for sale right now. But I want to – so since Chaos is a villain, and an unpredictable villain at best, we are talking tonight about – we're 2 weeks away from Tomb Raider with Alicia Vikander coming out. We're a couple weeks away from that. So right now, for the most of this month, we're going to be focusing on Tomb Raider mythology and looking back on it. My question to start off this conversation is what – makes a good villain? I'm gonna start with Gary.
Ooh.
Motive? Is one aspect I would say off the top of my head. Motive. Past. You know, usually past always relates into something somehow, in some way. It always links back to something from their past and in some way. So I'd say motive and history, I guess.
Raz?
I'll tell you what. For me, when I'm writing an evil character, the single, solitary, most important thing for me is I want there to be a motive for that character that he absolutely believes he is right, that he thinks he's the good guy. Every single villain I have, they think they're doing what's right. They think that they're fighting the wrong one. You know, Chaos's biggest problem is he feels he's the alpha. You know, he feels he's the absolute. And anything less, why is it existing? He's around Kincaid and the crew, and Gary delves into it in the miniseries. We'll get past it there, but just for what you're saying, like, part of why he's brought in to these people is they're all on the same page. They all believe that they are alphas. They are out to kill the weaker ones. You know what I mean? There's no misunderstanding. There's no confusing their cause. You know, you look at Lex Luthor. He is so power-driven. And you know what he thinks he's doing? He thinks he's doing the right thing by controlling the power, because those weak sheep, they don't know any fucking better. They're just running into each other, and they need a powerful man like Lex. You know what I mean? A Joker, all he's about is corrupting everything that Batman stands for. You know, he believes that Batman is wrong because of the way he is on his journey. Like, what does he think he's doing, saving a bunch of people by beating up a bunch of people? He's hypocritical at the highest level. And Joker, his whole agenda is breaking what little psychosis he feels Batman has left. You know what I mean? He thinks he's in the right. He loves the chaos he's bringing. He loves it. You know what I'm saying? For him, normal is wrong. And anytime you're dealing with a villain, there can be no middle ground. You don't want a villain that's kind of thinking, oh man, what have I done? No, you want him to believe 100% that what he's doing is the only way. It's the only way. Like, no one knows any better than him. You know, so that for me, and a certain level of ego, you got to be, man. You got to be a sociopath. You've got to have ego. You've got to believe that what you're doing is right. So that's where I come from.
I actually sometimes like a sympathetic villain, though. Like they're doing it for a reason, but they're sympathetic about it. I don't know how deep I should.
When you say it like that, I feel that is just as right. You know. Let's give you an example. Let's say some kid grows up and watches his father, who raised him his whole life, get murdered by gang members tragically. You know what I mean? Obviously, that's a pivotal point where it'll make change someone's judgment and skew them. You get it? So I agree 100% with what you're saying. And that's the kind of trauma I love to explore with hero or with villains and with anti-heroes. That's exactly it. You know, in order for someone to have the conviction they have, they had to have had an experience that makes them believe that way. You know, so that to me is what makes a villain. Good job, Gary. Thank you. I agree.
Well said. Well said also. Josh, what do you think, man? What do you think makes a good villain, man?
I love the villains that, like Raz was saying, like, I really like those villains that believe that they're doing it for the right reasons. Those are the most compelling ones, or like that it's personal. You know, when I think Arrow is a great example. Arrow has had really good, really fantastic villains, but at the same time, it's had really horrible ones. And when you look at the two best villains that have come out of the best seasons, you have Slade Wilson, who's doing it out of revenge, and you have Adrian,
Chase,
who was doing it also out of revenge. So you just have those. But, you know, here we have a movie that is up until this point, up to when it was released in 2001, you know, Lara Croft didn't really have any established villains. In the comics she did, but in the video games, which most people know, didn't really have it. You have a villain that is driven here by greed. And so I reached out to a couple of creators, and I wanted to get their inputs as creators, whether or not, you know, greed was a good motivator. You know, if someone just wants to be a villain just to be rich, is that really a good enough villain? We reached out to a bunch of creators to get their input on this. Katrina Rowitz, who is the creator behind the Teether Saga, said, "Everyone is driven by something. Greed is one of the seven deadly sins, so I'd say would be a strong motivator. Is it greed in general or greed for something in specific?" Todd Black says, "It's a good base, but you need to make it your own. What kind of greed drives him? What makes him different from guys like Lex Luthor? Answer that and roll with it." And Todd's a guest that we've had on here before. He's the author behind 10,000 Miles that we'll have a link in the description below for you guys to pick up. But also, Chris Thomasma, who is the gentleman behind Clarity Girl, says, "You can take it a step further and greed driven by insert something, i.e. maybe he or she was poor as a kid and hates that feeling. So there's a story behind why he's greedy." Troy Raines writes, "Anyone driven by greed is bad. Doesn't have to be a bad guy." And that's so true. Getting some love also from Jason Tudor, who is the creator behind the comic book Zorpao, who also appears on Crazy Monkey Inc., he says, it's always fine if the story is well told. Cherry Grant writes, plenty of people are driven by... greed. Colin Bird, who is the creator behind the motion comic The Crimson Fly, writes, it's not the originality of the idea that matters, but the execution of said idea. A person who pathologically wants money for its own sake, I think they can be funny slash well done if executed right. And he goes on to exemplify Scrooge McDuck in various forms of DuckTales. It can be done well if the person has developed it into a pathological need in response to a childhood trauma, even if they've resulted said trauma. And then he goes on to actually give an example of Nami from One Piece, the anime and the manga, or it can be an execution of a lust or something even greater. He says Adventure for Scrooge in DuckTales 2017, the new one, or Control for Lex Luthor. I don't think there is anything inherently cliche about greed or currency as a motivator. The problem is in how people express that idea. It's not, and then he goes back to say, it's not the originality of the idea that matters, but the execution of said idea. And Daniel Williams, who is the creator behind Stormwork Designs and an anthology that's going to be releasing this summer called Champions Quest, also says, greed is a motivator. The question that makes villain a good villain or a bad villain is why the greed is driving, is his driving force. If the villain is small time, it's understandable, or they once were extremely poor at one point, is the greed necessarily for their goal? If they are greedy just to be greedy, then they will seem weak unless they are one of the villain, just the heroes punching back. So we're going to hear from the guys from Crazy Monkey Inc. and the Chaos Creators here in just a second, but this is Hana Zara, and the song is called Black Widow. We'll be right back.
Thank you. veil your loneliness. So I say, Black Widow, what if this? I say, are you alone? She says, no, and I'll never be again. For it is I who walks beside me through the great silence. It is I who walks beside me through the great silence. But I say, oh, Black Widow, where do I go? Where do I go? Oh, where do I go? And I say, oh, Black Widow, what do I do? I say, what do I do? Oh, what do I do? I say, where do I go? She says, here, from the center of my web. All I truly need, it comes to me from the great silence. All I truly need, it comes to me from the great silence. Then she says, peace, my child. There is nothing more to ask. If you listen, there is music.
I feel like that is a compelling building block. Let's say I'm a kid that grew up in the ghettos to a single mother who was a whore or a stripper and never around and never had money because she was addicted to drugs, and you were wiping your butt with newspaper and eating canned beans, right? Now let's say you're a strong kid that grows up and is like, well, I'm never going to live like that again. I don't give a fuck what I have to do. I'll steal, I'll rob, I'll kill, I'll do anything, but I'll never be fucking poor ever again. You know what I mean? There's greed, there's motive, and he feels like he's doing the right thing, you know? Let's say you're a rich kid that's been given everything you've ever had. You know, you've never had to ask for anything. You want it, you get it, for whatever it is, a boat, whatever. You know, pretty soon, the world is your oyster. What? There's no challenge. What challenge is there? So what do you start doing? You start burning ants, watching them die. Then you start, you know, killing the dog. Then you start chasing cats. Then you start killing bears. Then you start, man, what else is there? I might as well kill a fucking human, see how good I am. You get what I'm saying? Greed is just one building block. It's an important building block, but you get the right sociopath with the right amount of greed, and hell yeah, you've got yourself a compelling villain. I look to Lex Luthor when I think of that. You know what I mean? That I look at Kingpin when you look at that. Like, yeah, there's some greedy motherfuckers out there. Let's go real life. You know what I mean? Let's go those hedge fund people. You know what I'm saying? That's greed. Hell yes. How about this? You ever heard of a guy named Gordon Gekko? You know, greed is good. Greed is good. Wall Street. There was a whole movie about that and the collateral damage done from single, solitary, selfish motive. So absolutely, I agree. Absolutely. It's great. And it's our job as writers is to take those building blocks, those elements, and make them interesting and enticing and enthralling to the reader that engages them, you know? So absolutely, man, bring on the greed. That makes them some bad assholes, man. Absolutely.
He summed it all up, man. Circumstances, you know, simple as that. Circumstances, that's exactly what he just explained in depth. Different circumstances causes different reactions for different people to do different shit to survive or because they're on top of the world. That's it.
And I will say that when greed has depth and it has motive behind it, it makes for a compelling villain, because then you start getting into the psychology of that character. You start getting into, oh, well, this is what makes him tick. This is the backstory. But you don't get that with this movie. And if you guys have never seen this movie, the villain is the weakest part, because here you just have a guy that just shows up just to have power. There's no rhyme or reason as to why he wants it. You know, there's no backstory. And I feel like when you don't have a character like that, that you don't have that depth. Because if you're gonna... Greed, I feel like, is one of those motivators for a character that it's been so done before that if you're going to just have a man that just wants money, he just wants power, but you don't give a reason behind it, it makes for a boring villain because you've seen it so many times before.
Are you talking specifically about the amazing Angelina Jolie 2001 movie Spectacular Tomb Raider?
I am.
Okay, because I have a different slant. Maybe it's because I have a crush on her. Maybe it's because she's hot like a tamale.
Look, I love this movie.
Oh no, let me offer a different side to what you're saying. As a fan of that movie, you know, watching it hundreds, if not thousands, of times in like slow motion, pausing it. I'm kidding. But the point is, I feel like the villain in that movie was incidental. I feel like the main villain in that movie was Laura Croft and her relationship with her father and her struggle to create and build her own identity. And I feel like that villain was more of a challenge that, okay, you've reached that goal. You know, if you watch that movie from the very opening sequence, she's hanging upside down on a rope, looking around, jumping, walking through, hands on her guns. She beats a damn robot. You get what I'm saying? She battles a robot. And she goes in there, solves that mission, brings it back to her computer guy for the training skill, right? So right off the bat, they're showing you, number one, she's impulsive, she's intensive. She asked for the live action drill. And what does she do? She shoots the shit out of that robot. You know what I mean? Like, that is showing you the type of character she is. And in a lot of ways, Tomb Raider to me is very similar to Midnight's Avenger because it's almost like she's her own worst enemy. You know what I mean? A lot of that movie was really great action set pieces. Set pieces. She was kicking a bunch of ass everywhere she goes. And I feel like each one of those were kind of like checkpoints to her character proceeding into the story of her own development. You know what I mean? So I kind of see it as they kind of made him a paint-by-numbers villain because it could have been anybody that she was facing. It wasn't necessarily about him. The whole movie was really about her.
I've never looked at it that way, and I've seen that movie probably just as much as you, and I've never really thought about it in that sense. And when you look at it in a different light, like it does. But that's the thing. I feel like that we have kind of embraced this culture so much to where we feel like every film has to have a villain. Every comic book has to have a villain.
Yes.
I mean, in some ways that's true, but when you can have a character journey and push out that more towards the forefront and have that villain, you know, it's still interesting. Like, yes, they could have focused on her, but they also could have, like, done better, I think, with the villain. Like, at least, you know, give him some slant to say, oh, well, you know, he was poor growing up. That's the reason why he wants to do that. He doesn't want to feel that way again. Like, even a throwaway scene like that could have been, you know, something a little bit better.
Well, when you say that to me, I feel like it was a casting issue. I feel like you give a good, powerful actor that villainous role that he can make his own, chew up the scenery, take those single lines of dialogue and add that venom to it. You know what I mean? I feel like that's what was missing. It was bad casting because to me, Tomb Raider, this is gonna sound crazy, but I want you to take the whole journey with me, Josh. All right, Gary, you ready? There's a movie called Rocky, right? I don't know if you heard of it, but he goes, and this whole movie, he wants to be a boxer. He's going to be a boxer. I don't want to be a bum. And it's all not only about physical evolution, but mental evolution, believing you are the best. Apollo Creed is a great villain, but he could have been anybody. He could have been anybody. He was just a champion that was giving Rocky a shot at the title. You get what I'm saying? Even at the end of the movie, Rocky doesn't even win. You know why? Because it's not even about Rocky winning. It's about him getting off the stool saying, fucking, let's do it. I'm going to the end, mother effer, you know? And I feel like with Tomb Raider, that was kind of that journey arc in that movie for Lara Croft and that relationship with her father. And I feel like if you imagine Christopher Walken as that guy, imagine that. Imagine Christopher Walken as the bad guy doing those lines. That would have worked. Or imagine, who's that actor from Inglourious Basterds that he played the German guy? Oh, I bet he would have done a superb job as the villain. You know what I mean? I think if they would have cast it better, that you just need someone that could chew up the scenery a little more. I don't know. But then again, I've got my Angelina Love glasses on, so that movie's an A+ no matter what.
There's a strong bias in the air.
Huge. Let me tell you, I could do a college thesis on any of her movies just to make sure that they're legit.
I've been binge watching Angelina movies all week. I've seen five or six this week alone.
Right. Let me tell you. Here's something I hope we can agree on. She is a stunning woman, without a doubt. But she does little subtle acting. Like, she's a good actor. She's a genuine good actor. People say a bunch of stuff about Tomb Raider. I bought her sass. You know what I mean? She played the role of a rich girl that was trying to prove her worth. That, you know what I mean? She always gave everyone just that enough sass, like letting you know, like, hey, yeah, I'm a Indiana Jones type, but I'm still rich, bitch. Like, you know what I mean? Respect. I like that. And there's a bunch of other movies she did where she's a very talented actress. I like her. You know what I mean? So there you go. Call me, Angela.
And you guys can check out all of our all more of the Tomb Raider history and review on our YouTube channel. But I want to ask this question specifically to Gary, because you had mentioned that the second issue of Chaos is very heavy with horror meeting action. So, as a writer and as a creator, how do you approach the subject of action in a script?
For me, I guess I would say, personally, violence, shock value, and mental sickness. That's how I deal with most of it. Violence, shock value, gore, you know, twisted, messed up stuff. You know, like, I'm working on something right now with a serial killer with leprosy. I swear to God I am, you know, and I don't... It's going to be bananas, but the point is that's how I go about it personally, but that's my secrets.
Do you ever kind of like find that it's when you're envisioning or like saying, all right, this is how I want this issue to go, do you ever have this idea of how much is too much as far as action goes? Because do I want to have, you know, do I want to have that balance with action and storytelling and horror and all these other elements?
Let me tell you. I have a fair amount, a lot amount of violence and gore and whatever else in the stuff that I write, but I put a lot of detailed other moments diving into that character specifically or something with that character specifically. And I use a lot of emotion and a lot of description, whether it be in comic book scripts. If you read my panel descriptions, they're like fucking paragraphs. Like Gabriel can tell you, like, I write like little paragraphs for a panel description with all plus the dialogue. But I literally envision my stuff, and that's why I can describe it so well. But yeah, I like to put a lot of emotional breaks in stuff, and some background, some reasoning, you know, like just to break up the violence and, you know, not oversaturate it. Like what you're saying. That's how I do it.
And Gabe, from someone who's also written a lot of comics in your time, you know, when you are as a publisher and as a creator, what do you ever feel like there's that you have to have that balance in order to make a fight more satisfying, or like an action piece in a comic is more satisfying when it has that balance?
No, I am one of those people that I grew up on Kung Fu Theater. I don't even know. I think that's so old. There's probably people that don't even understand what that was, you know. But like on Saturday mornings on Channel 5, they would put on movies 2-3 at a time of just old Kung Fu movies, Masters versus the whole town. It was greatest, my things ever. And then 80s came B movies, action movies, Van Damme movies, Sylvester Stallone movies, Aunt Arnold, you know what I mean? And what a lot of people don't understand is underneath all that violence and underneath all those ass kicking, because it was all just ass kicking, you know what I mean? It was all just punching and kicking people and beating a bunch of bad guys up and giving them what they deserved, you know? And you look at all that, and all of that, you can even watch those today. You can even watch that, and you can look, and all of that is a peaceful man who would. Have you ever heard the old saying, it's better to be a samurai in a garden than a gardener in a war? Have you ever heard that?
No.
No? Okay, well, that is the old saying of what it meant to be a man. Like, if you were a man, you could kill anyone, but you didn't. You pruned roses. You took care of the garden. But should the need arise, you will tear heads off. As opposed to a man that can make a beautiful flower, but when they come to rape and pillage, bend over because your booty hole is getting drilled hard. They're calling you Nancy. You know what I mean? So those type of options that you have. And in every one of those movies, you can look. It was a man that was a hardcore badass just trying not to be a bad. Like, I don't want to hurt you, man. I don't want to kill you and your whole gang and the whole army and all those. I don't want to kill you all. I just want to be left alone. But they won't.
He's full man forced to fight.
They just won't leave him alone. He has to do what he does best. Yeah. Though, like, for me, my comic books, everything Gabriel Ramirez writes and creates, it's that study. It's the study of that psychosis of you are doing one thing and you make a choice and the results of that choice. So all of my action is straight, like, how creative can I be? Like, what kind of cool action poses can I do? What kind of all violence can I action? You know, Gary does gore. I do action. There is a huge different scene. And when he does a scene of two guys fighting, someone grabs the other guy and he stabs him right through the neck, and the blade goes the other side, and there's blood everywhere, and impossible to test, and then it's shattered. This blood's splurting everywhere. For me, it'll be like a 5-page sequence where he's jumping and slicing and blocking and hitting, and the other guy, you know what I mean? So mine's like, I come from that school of choreographed action sequences that are beautiful to look at, and they kind of bookend moral choices, but they're together but not. You know what I mean? Like, I don't let any of that influence my action. Action is action. It's got to be in your face. It's got to be kinetic. It's got to be fun. You want to hold the reader's attention. That's the beautiful thing about comic book art is you're able to freeze moments in time for the reader to really examine and look at, and as much details you put on that page, as many panels as you put in that page, is, you know, you're able to control that sort of storytelling and paneling. And for me, that's what comic books are all about, is awesome action sequences that have a morality's tale or study.
There's a lot of the similarities between, you know, what you guys are doing with Chaos and Tomb Raider, and I don't want to undermine like the horror aspect of it by comparing the two, of Chaos. But I was rewatching for this episode the Tomb Raider film from 2001, and I love action, and I love films like, you know, John Wick and Atomic Blonde and these, you know, the old 80s films that are just, you know, senseless violence essentially. But there are just some moments in this where the fight sequences I felt like just dragged on. And so I posed a question to some friends of mine. I was like, well, at what point is action sequences in movies, at what point are they too much?
Right. Perspective, well, you know, man.
Let me tell you, I'm sorry to jump, but I gotta say this. Josh, there's a series called Fast and the Furious. You ever heard of it?
Love
you ever
Fast
heard
and
of it?
Furious.
I fucking love it, man. If you've seen the last two Fast and the Furious movies, they are loud as balls. There is fighting. Everyone's fighting. Everyone's fighting. They're kicking all the asses. They're fighting people. They're shooting people. They're jumping places. There's a great writer. He does a book called Harlan Buck Free Sword. His name's Scott Ian Weldon. And him and I have this conversation all the time, because to Scott, there's a certain amount of action, and then it becomes too much, right?
Yeah.
For me, there is no. Crank it to 10. No. Crank it to 11. You know what I mean? Like, more punches, more kicks. Yeah, no, really, punch him 10 more times. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to love it. Extend scene me, you know? So like, that's what I like about entertainment. They make movies like that for me, and then they make movies that aren't like that for Scott, you know? And when you were talking about – it's funny because you said that, because when you were talking about the Tomb Raider and the fight scene that goes on too long, I think about the fight when she was in the – hanging up top and all the soldiers are coming down from the lines and attacking and shooting. You know what I'm talking about? In the white suits. Is that the scene you were talking about? Did that run a little long to you?
No. The main one that I'm talking about is the one where they're in the temple for the first time. And
the robots,
not the robots, like the stone people, I guess, like after they find the half. I was like, okay, it felt more to me like a cut scene in a video game. But I mean, at that time, we were still learning how to adapt things. Gary.
Right.
Have you ever watched Dragon Ball Z? Have you ever seen how long somebody will, like, power up for? It'll be like a whole episode of, but it's amazing. And it's and like, it'll be like a whole saga of just straight-up fight, and then there'll be a whole saga of just straight-up bullshit. Dragon Ball.
I think you can classify me and Gary as you can never have too much action, you know?
I love action, but I feel like there's like a line that you have to cross, because like even the Fast and the Furious movies, like, yes, there's lines, but there's still plot development that's moving forward. They don't feel overbearing to me. I guess I just watching this one more from a critical standpoint and not a fan standpoint this past time, it was like, all right, you know, it's cool action sequences. I love the action sequence that you had mentioned where she's hanging from the roof and they all, but like, I love that. Like,
right.
The sequences are so much fun. They just go on forever.
Well, you know what? I think you nailed it though. And I don't know if you did it on purpose or on accident, but you nailed it. This is a video game movie that was made in 2001 to serve Tomb Raider fans that love the video game. And what you said right now nailed it. Those fight scenes were like cut video game scenes, which if you remember back in the day, like, there weren't a lot of video game movies out there even coming out, let alone good, let alone accomplished or anything. So I think, for me anyway, speaking clearly, because I remember when it came out, I remember seeing it at the theaters and buying it the DVD, and you know what I mean? I love that they paid homage to the video game like that, you know. So I get what you're saying, but I kind of think that was intentional. I think that was their agenda at the time.
I'd agree with that.
About you, Angelina.
we'll attach her Twitter handle when we promote this episode.
Tell her to send the restraining order. This direction.
I think you're probably close to her now. So
I'm telling you.
But yeah, that is going to do it for us this week. If you guys have seen Tomb Raider, what did you guys think about it? Tweet to us at Victims and Villains. We're all big fans of it. Gary, I didn't ask you, man. Do you like Tomb Raider at all?
I actually never watched the whole thing, to be honest. It was never really my thing. When I was young, growing up and stuff, man, honestly, I was watching like Dragon Ball Z and like Yu Yu Hakusho and like some older anime and stuff. But I was also watching like Nightmare on Elm Street, 1990 It, like, you know, like not so much action, but more horror. I guess that's why I'm here, where I am now, you know? But no, maybe I should see it, but I haven't seen it.
It's streaming on Netflix right now, and I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon. We're 2 weeks away from the brand new movie. I'm super pumped on it. I'm going to ask this question, though, because whether you've seen the film or you haven't, whether you've played a game or you haven't, there's no denying that Tomb Raider as a property has really redefined the video game generation, and even, I would dare even to say, some of the early, you know, these comic book / video game movies. Do you think that in some way Angelina Jolie and this cast and crew really paved the way for strong female characters that we have, you know, we have now in pop culture?
I think the Tomb Raider game did, for sure, without a doubt. I mean, how many games can you think of that have strong female characters as the main hero?
Metroid.
I was gonna say Metroid.
See, I knew you were, I was hoping someone would say Metroid, but let's be honest. How many people? I'm a 42-year-old man. I found out about 6 years ago Metroid was a chick. You understand me? That's my point. Like Lara Croft came in with the Tomb Raider video game in her little short shorts with her little tank top and her two gun sunglasses, talking about tough chick, watch out, boys. You know what I mean? I think Angelina Jolie and the Tomb Raider movie were superb, but you got to give that credit to the game. That game put it down for strong women, and I think definitely paved the way for the rest of them to come. You know, it was a great character, great brand. I mean, it shows you how important that character is. That they're doing a new movie still. You know what I mean? That's a straight franchise. Kudos to Lara Croft.
Gary, what about you, man? Go.
I mean, like I said, I didn't really ever play the game, honestly, when I was young, because I was born in 91 and stuff, so when I was younger, I was playing Pokemon on Game Boy, and really early Sega Genesis, I was playing Sonic the Hedgehog and shit like that, but really, my younger years, like, you know, pre-teens and shit, I was all up in N64, dude, playing Mario 64 and Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, and Star Fox and Super Smash. But, Tomb Raider was never really my thing. I respect it. It's cool. You know, I fuck with it. I don't have anything against it. Just something that I ever checked out.
I have to say, in the... when they re-released it on Blu-ray not that long ago, there's a documentary, a mini documentary, and you really, yes, for years, for 50 some years, we've had characters that have had strong, and I mean, even 75, when you look at, you know, characters like Wonder Woman, you look at characters like Elektra, and you look at Storm and Jean Grey, and you look at all these strong comic book characters that we've had. Video games, when there was a shift when Lara Croft was introduced, because you had, you know, it was no longer cartridges now, it was discs, and she really kind of became this first, you know, put front and center. It wasn't this like plot twist like it was with Metroid. She was the first video game character that was really front and center, female led, strong, that could hold her own. And
yeah,
I loved that. And, you know, I think that she's kind of really paved the way for other, you know, strong characters as well.
Absolutely.
There's one that came earlier. I just thought about it.
Go for it.
One character, Miss Pac-Man.
Oh,
I'm just messing.
You know, here's the problem with Miss Pac-Man. She rode Pac-Man's coattails. Pac-Man set the way. Pac-Man built the franchise. Pac-Man created the empire. And then Miss Pac-Man said, "Hold my beer." You know what I mean? Lara Croft Tomb Raider. She did that thing herself. Like, you know, she built that franchise on her shoulders and her, you know, quads, strong quads and calves. You know.
Stretch them out.
All right. that is going to do it for us this week. Where can people find you online, Gary, and where can people find out more about your books?
You can find me on Instagram, eaterofworld666. Don't forget the underscores. Personal Facebook, Gary Goldstein. I also have a Facebook fan page that I barely post on and no one likes, but it's all right. I'm just kidding.
I liked it. I liked that.
I liked it too.
It's Gary Goldstein, comic book writer, poet, author. I think that's like the whole title of the page. It's like a long title, but you know, speaks enough for what I'm doing. Those things. Also, you can also see, you know, check me out through Crazy Monkey because, you know, I'm associated with them. Also, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but I know you guys know this, but I mean the people who are going to hear this, that I'm working on a poetry collection, Dark Stuff, and Gabriel knows about it. We've been in talks about it. I don't know how much you want to say about that, but that's going to be coming too.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys can get a sneak peek of some of that stuff. Some of his poems actually appeared in our Color of Hope. Some of the characters, Gabriel actually submitted some of the characters. So if you guys want to check that out, we'll provide links down below. But all of those proceeds go towards getting mental health into schools. And where can people find you, my friend?
www.crazymonkeyinc.com. We have some of the best indie comic books by some of the greatest indie creators out there. We have all age comic books in the Star Wars and Star Trek vein. That's right, Gary Goldstein. I'm talking about you, baby. We also have a mature line if you like a little more blood and guts in your story, but they're all very character-driven, wonderful stuff. I couldn't be more impressed with what we're doing. Instagram and Facebook, find me at crazymonkeyinc.com. For all you that are all with the hot shit, find me on Vero, Gabriel Ramirez. It's a little twitchy still, but we're on it, man. Find us and let's join the revolution, baby. Buy our stuff. Tell your friends.
Hell yeah.
All right. If you guys are listening to this right now and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that take place each and every day. For every successful one of those suicides, 25 more are being attempted. That's 3,075 suicides that are attempted right here in our own backyard. And when you scale back internationally, there are 2,160 successful suicides that take place every day and 800,000 yearly. That's one death every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, reach out to us on any of our social media platforms, the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255, or also text anonymously to 741-741. But we are leaving you guys this week again. This is Hannah Zara, and the song is called House of Mirrors. We'll see you guys next week.
And you might try.
flowers and shades of sugar, more than I could ask. My lovely every sun, you find me on a corner and you take me home again. Tell you I was sorry, and you told me not to be. You said I don't need your confession. Will you just come outside and see that she is changing up her face again? She is shifting in her skin, and every time I think I see her, she goes and changes form again. Saying sorry, I felt like bowing down my head. If I cannot be your beloved, can I still bring you tea and bread? Can I still stand with you in wonder while the creature she unfolds? And the illusion loses hold. You find me on a corner and you take